against Harvey, but his mind was poisoned already, and he refused to believe anything bad about him. One day, Morgan went out in his hunting wag with only one servant. It was found bombed out. Sticky supposedly did it, but they found boot tracks afterward.
And Stickies don't wear...
boots, right. The body was torn apart by the explosion. Not enough left to fill the long wooden box. I went and peeked. They put dirt in, Christy, to make the weight. Dirt for my brother.
Ryan, if you don't...
I gotta talk this out with someone. Never had anyone before that I could tell this to. If we go back there, the Front Royal, I want you to know everything about it.
Okay, go on.
I tried to tell Father, but he was old, shaken by what was happening. He wouldn't listen. But Harvey heard what I'd been saying, and marked me for an early grave.
So wise, so young, will ne'er live long, it said. That's from that play. Was your brother married, then?
Morgan? Yes, Gwenema was her name. A strange, muty girl. Liked her. Well, I suppose I loved her. I was 14. Jack's age.
What happened to her?
She disappeared. Nobody would talk about it. A great wall of fucking silence. They said she was carrying a child, and she lived out in the Deathlands, but I doubt it. Harvey would have set his dogs on her trail. For a few moments, there was silence between them, broken only by the hurtling water as it rushed over the lip of the falls. Christy leaned back on an elbow, glancing behind them, noticing, at the edge of the trees beyond the clearing, a small cluster of jack-in-the-pulpits, the white spikes bravely erect in the green cup. Harvey had made his play the day after Ryan's 15th birthday. Using bribed and terrified servants, he arranged for Ryan's evening meal to be drugged. Then he and a half dozen of the Ville's sec men planned to take the sleeping boy. The boy would then be weighted and dropped into the moat that circled the main house of Front Royal. Not all the servants were in Harvey's pay, and not all loved him. An old armorer called Kenny Morse caught wind of the plan from a kitchen maid. Ryan didn't take the food, and he was ready for them. Even before Morgan's murder, Ryan Carter had begun to try to safeguard himself. Kenny Morse had stolen an old .45 Colt from the castle armory for him. Ryan cleaned and oiled it, and spent hours practicing until he could use it with expertise. He was instructed by the diminutive Morse, who risked at best a beating from the Baron for breaking his orders that his youngest son was not to have a blaster. That night, Ryan was ready.
I waited just inside the door of my room. A narrow crack showed me the corridor. It was gloomy. On his way out, Kenny had removed two of the light bulbs from their sockets. The Ville had vast supplies of gas and generators for power. It was midnight when Harvey and his butchers came for me. My first two shots killed two of the sec men, warning Harvey and the others that the plan had failed and that I was no lamb, waiting patiently for the slaughter. I needed to go on the offensive, so I jumped out, my gun braced in both hands, firing twice at the nearest guard. The first round ripped through his upper arm as he dove to the side. The second hit him through the side of the face. Harvey snapped off two shots with his pistol. I remember the bullets exploding off the wall by my left shoulder. I called him the bastard killer he was. Screamed it. I was so fucking angry that I'd have torn his face off his skull if I could have reached him. Another sec man was flat on the floor, blocking off the exit to the stairs. He was hiding behind the corpse of the second man I'd chilled. I remember, his arms and legs were still twitching and jerking. There was a burst of shots from a machine pistol, but I was up and moving again. I dodged back toward the open door of my turret bedroom. I snapped off another round and missed, but the second round from the Colt caught the guard through the open mouth as he raised his head. Harvey shouted to me then. He'd seen the blaster and knew it held seven rounds. He yelped out that he knew I only had one left.
What'd you say?
Told him I had a spare mag. Didn't, though. Kenny only stole one mag for me. I'd fired six and had one left. The fucker was right.
No other way out? No door? No window?
50 feet on stone. Courtyard under the window. You gotta realize, Christy, that this Ville was built way back before the long winter. Based on some kind of old castle. Harvey would have some more sec men there. Faster than goose shit off a shovel. There was only one way out. Past my big brother. So I dove out and rolled. A lot of lead came my way, one chunks of rock off the walls. I squeezed my lash out at Harvey, but he was hunkered down, and it went high. At the time, I had me a real good knife. I lost it later in a firefight near what used to be Kansas City. It was made with a hoof of a stag for a hilt, and it fitted the palm of my hand like it had been made for it. I jumped the dead and the dying. They all figured I must have more ammo or I was fucking crazy. My brother called me a bastard, and I called him a butcher. They were the last words we spoke. Harvey was taller and stronger than me, and he clawed out at me. He drew me in. I can remember his fingers dug into my flesh. And then I felt this streak of icy fire across my ribs. And Harvey was laughing. His breath was rank in my face. The knife cut was long and painful, but it wasn't deep. Harvey stopped laughing when I managed to bring my own blade into play. I sliced into his upper arm. I still remember him squealing in shock and pain. Another minute and I'd have butchered the gimp where he stood. But there was another sec man there, and he came from behind and pulled me away. I killed the guard with one thrust to the heart. I felt a moment of being sorry. His name was George Cross. He was a good man. But I killed him. And he delayed me for the second that caused me my eye. And fucking near killed me. As I turned, I saw Harvey lunging toward my face. I tried to parry the knife thrust, but I was too slow. I saw it, Christy. I saw the knife. I can see it to this day if I close my eyes. See the point of his dagger. Like a needle tipped with fire. It came right into my eye. I could hear the snicket grating against the bone of the socket. No pain. Not a single bit of pain. It felt like hot water on my cheek where the eye had burst open. Only a spot or two of blood. I nearly dropped my knife. Or it fell and I snatched it up. I don't remember which. He slashed at me again, went for my other eye. He missed by, well, you can see for yourself. Opened up half my face like a butcher with a lamb's carcass. Then I bled. Oh, I surely bled then. I was half blind, I was terrified, and the pain was unbelievable. And I lashed out at the fucking smirking, triumphant face of my brother. I got lucky and punched him in the middle of his hooked nose. I remember feeling it crumple under the blow like a crushed egg. So I ran, down and up along passages. I was near death from the loss of blood, blinded. Someone helped me. Might have been Kenny Morse, I don't know. Suddenly I was out of the house and across the moat. There was snow on my face, melting and running with the blood all over my neck and shirt. A howling wind blew through the pines on the far side of the valley, away from the ville. And I was gone. 15 years old, and I never went back. Never even thought about going back. Not until now. Ryan sat up and pulled on his shirt and coat. The evening chill was rising from the Hudson, and the sun had nearly gone down. I can smell fish cooking.
Want to go back? Before dark?
Yeah.
Help me up, lover.
Yeah.
Thanks. What happened back at Front Royal after you'd fled the place? That double crazy Botchko said your father married again. And what about Harvey?
Not much to tell. Haven't heard much fresh until down in the swamps there.
There had been a purge. Harvey had convinced the ailing Baron Cotter that his youngest son was a murderous renegade, and he was named Wolf's Head so that every man's hand was against him. Several servants, believed loyal to Ryan and to Morgan's memory, were executed on the old gibbets. Kenny Morse was the first to go, shrieking defiance as his feet were kicked off the stool and he danced in the air. Back in Louisiana, Pecker Botchko had told them about the cobbles of the courtyard flowing inches deep in sticky blood that clotted and blocked the drains of the entire ville. He had also told Ryan and Christy about the new Lady Carter. She was a sluttish whore who had been used by Harvey, but whose strength of will and capacity for evil outstripped the halting young man. She seduced Baron Carter, persuading the old man of her love for him. Ryan's father, by now, was slipping fast into dementia, finding it hard to tell fact from dream. Lady Rachel Carter was plump and beautiful and just 18 years old. She fed opiates to the old man so that he slept, then ran light-footed along the winding corridors to the bedroom of Harvey Carter. They found that Ryan's father was more tenacious than they'd expected. He didn't die, despite being poorly fed and treated harshly by the girl bride. Harvey drew back from butchering the frail old man, but his mistress did not. One night, under the guise of playing a game of love, she cajoled the Baron into letting her tie his hands and feet to the corners of their great four-poster, using cords of silk. She whispered as she pulled the knots tighter of the pleasure she would give him once he was her helpless slave. The silk was as thin as cotton, yet as strong as wire, and had been tied so tight that it bit into his wrinkled skin and drew blood from beneath his blackened nails. Baron Carter tried to call out, realizing at that last awful moment that her intention was murder. But Rachel laughed at him, mocking him, even as she knotted a gag around his mouth, muffling his cries for aid. She told him then of her contempt for him as she climbed naked astride his chest, gripping him with her heels as though he were a horse. She told him of her lust for his son and of their vile and perverse pleasures together. As she leaned over him, her breasts brushed his cheeks, her nipples swollen with her ruthless enjoyment of what she was doing to him. Rachel picked up a large satin pillow, holding it as she wriggled up his body. Rachel placed the pillow tenderly over his face, leaning all her weight on top of it, whispering as she did so of how Harvey had murdered Morgan and how he had planned to kill Ryan, but the brat had escaped. She felt the struggles against the suffocating pressure become weaker until, with a final jerking convulsion, Baron Titus Carter went to join his ancestors. Ryan and Christy picked their way down the twisting path through the woods, taking care as the light was fading fast.
And they have a son?
That's what I heard. Jabez Pendragon Carter. Must be around the same age as Whitey down there.
Christy sniffed the air.
Gaia, but that fish makes my mouth water. You feeling hungry now, lover? After all your exercise?
Ryan checked in mid-stride, turning to look at her, his face a pale blur in the half-light. The patch over his ruined eye seemed blacker than it usually did. He reached out and took Christy by the hand.
I'm sure.
What, that you're hungry?
No.
What then?
That crazy old bastard, Botchko. I've been thinking about the last thing he said.
What was that?
The crow shits where the eagle should roost. Return and claim what should be yours.
I remember.
It was a scar that I thought had been healed for 20 years. Now I know that I was wrong. Now I know where I'm going.
Where?
I'm going home, lover. Home.
They walked back to the beach,